most consumers, they just want to feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves whenever they spend their hard-earned money on a product. If you go out and buy a big CPG conglomerate's product, you probably don't really feel like you're a part of the team. If you do go out and buy, you know, a smaller startup company's product, and they also have the same alignment as you do when it comes to their health and wellness and their missions to give back and the fact that they're fun, family friendly, I think, you know, it's easier to feel a part of that team than it is to feel a part of like some big corporate suits team.
Welcome to the Brands for a Better World podcast, the podcast that brings you the stories behind people and products, building a more just, healthy, and regenerative future for us all. Tune in weekly, and together, we'll learn why these better products and brands were created, how they're helping fix broken systems, and what you can do to support them. My hope is that you'll discover some new brands to love and get some sparks of inspiration that will help you live your best life. Hi, I'm your host, Gage Mitchell, founder of Modern Species, a sustainable brand design agency helping better brands grow to scale their impact. This podcast is one way we do that. If you like the show, please help it grow by leaving ratings and reviews on your podcast app and by sharing your favorite episodes with your friends. Maybe this will be one of them. On this episode, I'm speaking with Spencer Lin, Northeast Regional Manager of COS, about how he found his way into nutrition, how the ancient Greek physician Hippocrates inspired the founders of COS, and how the brand is not only providing better nutrition to family households, but also donating 10 million meals to people in need, and so much more.
Hey, so my name is Spencer Lin. I'm the Northeast Regional Manager for COS. We have a line of plant-based protein powders and other health and wellness products. All of our products are USDA certified organic, and then we have some pretty cool missions too behind our brand. What I do for COS, I handle 19 states that make up pretty much the whole entire northeast quarter of the United States, basically everything from Chicago and east, and DC and north is my territory. You know, I sell us into retail accounts, I manage the trade spend and the promotions, and I also manage six different brokerage firms that, you know, work as third-party sales forces to COS.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to dive in a little bit more into COS, but also your role and some of the wisdom you've learned in that role. Let's start, though, with the journey, like how you ended up here, because I always find it fascinating how people end up in their specific roles or in the food industry in general. I know you started out in ingredients before you came into brand, but what in general pulled you into food? And then what was that kind of journey like moving through ingredients to brand?
It is a pretty crazy background story without diving too far down the rabbit hole. So I was in the Army for 5 years. I was an infantry officer in the Army. And then as I was getting out of the Army has a program called the Career Skills Program where you can apply to do a civilian internship your last 3 months in service to kind of help you, you know, bridge that gap back into the civilian world. So I applied to that program, got accepted into it. So now my next step was to find an internship. So I'd always been interested in, you know, the world of sports nutrition, health and wellness, dietary supplements, things like that. And I had some connections in the industry. I knew a couple people, but I reached out to a connection, you know, explained my situation to him. He put me in touch with somebody else at a company called Compound Solutions, who is an ingredient supplier to brands and manufacturers. Compound Solutions, you know, supplies them the raw materials that will eventually go into, you know, a protein powder or a pre-workout and end up on a shelf. So he put me in touch with them. I reached out to them, again, explained the situation that I had an opportunity to do an internship for 3 months, and they decided to bring me in as an intern. And that was a great experience. I got to touch several different functions of the business. I was mostly in marketing with them, but I also got to kind of cross train under the sales team a little bit. I learned a little bit from their quality team and how they, you know, handle all of the ingredients that are incoming and outgoing from the warehouse. So I got to touch different functions of that business. I mean, I was a productive member of the team while I was there too. I did well enough that when my internship was over and, you know, I was getting out of the Army, they actually offered me a full-time job with them. Basically, started out as like a sales admin, and then that kind of evolved into, you know, they started to slowly feed me some of my own sales accounts. And then, yeah, I was just a, you know, a regular sales account manager towards the end of my time with Compound Solutions. I was there for about 2 years. And then from there, the chief revenue officer at COS reached out to me. He actually played football at the same college that I played at. He's a good bit older. He played there in the 80s, won a championship there in the 1980s. He knew I was in sports nutrition world. He knew I was in sales. He was the chief revenue officer at COS, and he had the opportunity to build out a sales team underneath him and kind of reached out to me, made me an offer that I couldn't refuse to leave Compound Solutions and come work for COS and in the world of CPG. So kind of went from, you know, one part of the sports nutrition supply chain to, you know, the end of the sports nutrition supply chain, working for a company that puts a product on shelf.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So it tied back into your interest in health and wellness, and it just kind of pulled you into this space, and then the cost chief revenue officer pulled you forward again. So it's nice to have those like connections laid out for you like that.
Yeah, I was definitely fortunate, and definitely took advantage of the opportunities that were thrown at me. And then also, you know, the world of B2B sales, of business to business sales, working for an ingredient supplier, very, very different than the world of, you know, working for a brand, the end product in the CPG space, especially where we have a product that's on shelf in, you know, a lot of big brick and mortar retailers. CPG is its own rabbit hole that goes all the way down. And it's definitely been interesting. I mean, it sells as sales, right? If you can sell plant-based protein powder, you can sell a car, right? It's a relationship building. It's understanding your product and understanding how to promote it. But there are just so many more nooks and crannies in CPG, and just there's a very deep learning curve to learn. Not, I mean, even things like all the different acronyms that exist in the world of CPG, which is in and of itself an acronym. So yeah, there's definitely a lot to learn, but it's interesting. It's never boring. That's for sure.
Yeah. Do you think it's that much more complex just because maybe when you're doing ingredients, for example, you probably have a couple main customers or a couple main channels that you're selling into, right? People who need those ingredients. But when you're a brand, you've got the consumer, you've got the retailer, you've got online retailers, you've got even other brands sometimes that buy your stuff. You got to manage the ingredients companies, you got to manage, which sometimes goes back to finding the right farms and other things. And then you've got brokers, distributors, like all these, so many other people that you've got to deal with. Is that the complexity you're talking about? It's just the scope expands to have to think about lots of other channels and stakeholders.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are so many more moving parts in the world of CPG. And then like ultimately, like you kind of referenced, ultimately you are interfacing directly with the end consumer. Whereas in B2B sales, you're really not. I mean, I guess the second business kind of is the end consumer, but also not really, because that product is still going further down the line to a shelf somewhere or to, you know, a D2C fulfillment warehouse. So yeah, I think there are just so many more moving parts in the world of CPG, a lot more people to interact with, interface with, and then ultimately try to please at the end of it.
Yeah. Which I guess in the sales role, I would just be curious if how much more complicated it is in that role. I guess obviously as a business in general with operations, sales, marketing, et cetera, it's very complex. But from a sales specific role, do you have to keep all those stakeholders, or do you just get to focus on one customer? Like, are you just focused on retailers, for example?
That's a great question. I think the biggest thing I do is sell us into brick and mortar retailers, right? Like once we're on shelf, that's the first objective. That is by no means the main objective, because now I have to consider sell through, right? How do we reach the customer for them to come in and buy our product off shelf? And then, you know, in lockstep with that is, you know, managing promotions, right? Making sure we're promoting our product frequently on, you know, temporary price reductions, trying to get, you know, off shelf promotion in the store, whether that be like a floor display or an end cap or like a dump bin for like our single serving sachets, or, you know, just different ways to catch the eyes of consumers in a grocery store. Because I mean, there's literally thousands of products on the shelf competing for, you know, 15, 20 minutes of a consumer's day. So yeah, there's just, again, so many more things that go into it other than just getting on the shelf. That's the main objective. That's the first part of the battle, but there's still a long way to go after that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are you also in charge of sales through your website, through or other online channels, or do you mostly focus on brick and mortar?
No, so I'm entirely on brick and mortar. Now, I do have a couple online retailers that I work with, like Swanson Health, for example, but not our D2C team. So at Cost, we have our retail sales team, we have our D2C sales team, and then we have our Amazon sales team too. So three different sales teams all make up, you know, all of Cost sales.
Yeah, which again goes to explain the complexity of a CPG brand, is you even need multiple different sales teams to serve different channels, and then all coordinate together.
But it is cool because, I mean, we do have friendly competition amongst the different sales teams, right? D2C is trying to outsell retail, retail is trying to outsell Amazon, and vice versa. Yeah. So we are, you know, friendly competitively with each other, but it also, that ultimately helps the company at the end of the day. We do support each other and we do learn things from each other. There is a lot of carryover from different sales channels. Then there are also some things that are entirely different. Like, you know, our Amazon team, I think they speak a different language sometime when they're talking about ROAS and CAC and all those different acronyms that they have. So yeah, it is, there's a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences too. But like I said, ultimately we have a friendly competition, and if we outsell them for a quarter, they'll hear about it from us and vice versa. So
that'd be a fun, like a culture team building exercise to have, like some sort of, I don't know if it would be a Jeopardy style, like some sort of game where the sales teams compete against each other to understand each other's terminology.
Yeah.
And it could be like, what does ROAS stand for or something? And then you, the other teams not involved with Amazon have to like...
The velocity acronyms, that, like units per store per week. And
Yeah, that'd be fun. That's cool. So it's fun hearing about your role and your transition into this business, but let's talk a little bit about COS itself. So I know you're not the founder, but you probably know the founding story. So how do you understand the founding story? Why does COS exist?
Yeah, it's a great question. It is a pretty cool story. So first of all, COS, our name, a lot of people ask about that. A lot of people think it's an acronym. It's not. COS is the Greek island where Hippocrates was born. Hippocrates is the father, considered to be the father of modern medicine. He's the one that famously said, let food be thy medicine, let medicine be thy food. So it's kind of, you know, one of the core pillars that the company was founded on is we want to make it as easy and as convenient and as tasty as possible for people to just get the good stuff in their body and kind of take a more preventative approach to health rather than a, you know, a reactive approach to health, you know, hopefully take care of themselves and their health before they have to actually use medicine or go to a hospital. That kind of is how the company got started. So initially, our two co-founders, they kind of hit it big in the early days of Amazon, like the very, very first early days of Amazon, selling electronic equipment, recording equipment, audiovisual equipment on Amazon. And they were like the first movers, like they were the first people on Amazon selling that stuff. So, you know, just kind of by default, they hit it big. And then, you know, in pursuit of that business, they were traveling around the world, you know, like signing contracts with vendors in China. And then, you know, so they were traveling over to China, traveling around the world, you know, building this business while also simultaneously raising families. And then throughout the course of that, they kind of both lost touch with their health. They grew up in Southern California, active, hiking, surfing, you know, actively growing up and in good shape and everything. And then throughout the pursuit of this business venture, they kind of both let that slip by the wayside. And then when they kind of eventually realized that they needed to do something about their health and, you know, regain what they had lost, when they both started to get active again and, you know, try to make conscious decisions and eat healthier, but also find products that were convenient for them on their active, you know, on their daily on-the-go lifestyle, and then also things that their family could use too and that they could feel good about giving their families, they really didn't find too much else out there that met all of those requirements and then also tasted good and kind of resonated with the whole family. So, you know, being entrepreneurs and businessmen like they were, they said, hey, screw it, we'll just do it ourselves. That is kind of how COS got started. Company Bridging got started back in 2019, initially entirely on Amazon and D2C. And then since then, we've rolled pretty heavily into brick and mortar retail.
Nice. So they were able to use their Amazon skills from the past, but translate it to this new focus on health, which is cool. So that original Amazon growth, did their lessons learned from their previous Amazon business really apply, or was it a different animal trying to sell?
No, it definitely applied just in terms of figuring out how to rank your product on Amazon, how to, you know, things like search engine optimization, and even just the logistics of selling on Amazon. All of those things carried over entirely to now selling health and wellness products on Amazon. Same game for that. So they definitely capitalized on their previous experience when they started COS.
That's really cool. And that's part of why I like digging into people's background too, is because you uncover some of those things where if you just look at the snapshot of where people are now, it feels maybe apples to apples, like, oh, I don't know why this company is doing so well and this one's not, or this person's doing well and I'm not. But it all comes back to what they were doing before and how those skills translated, or what connections they had. Like in your case, like you knew someone who knew someone or whatever that brought you into this industry and this space that might have been hard to get into without that connection. And with the founders of COS, if they hadn't started the Amazon business, they might not have done so well with COS on Amazon right away. And then maybe it wouldn't have grown fast enough to shift into brick and mortar and kind of expand into the business it is. So it's just really cool hearing kind of the, some of those stories to give context to a business, but also to let everyone out there, the other listeners, know not to compare, because everyone's paths are different. Everyone's journey is different.
Like I said, we're all running our own race.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. So that's awesome. Like a great reason to start a company, obviously, focus on health. And I totally agree with the let thy food be thy medicine kind of focus, because if you're eating well, hydrating, and sleeping well, your health kind of figures itself out, especially if you're then finding ways to move your body frequently. So it solves a lot of other problems. But anyways, you briefly mentioned kind of what you sell, but let's go into nerd out on a little bit of the details there. So I know it's like organic plant-based nutrition in general, but there's lots of different products. I was poking around on your website. So you've got stuff across different categories. So What are your, I guess, key product categories and main selling points that people should pay attention to?
Yes, we have over 20 SKUs in total, but it's no secret that our plant-based protein powder are our hero SKUs. We have a handful of different flavors of those too. The chocolate and the vanilla, I mean, obviously they're the best sellers just because, you know, those are the flavors that are everywhere and those flavors just do the best in general. Actually, behind me, I have the blueberry muffin, which is my favorite of our plant-based protein powder flavors. I also have a chocolate peanut butter. We have an unflavored version for those. Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you know, sometimes things that are overly sweet don't do for you, but the unflavored version is great for baking and to use in recipes where, you know, you don't want any, you know, overpowering flavors to mess with the recipes. And we have a salted caramel coffee flavor as well. And those are our, you know, our main protein powder flavors. And in addition to the protein powders, we have, we call them our superfood single ingredients. So it's literally just, you know, one ingredient. So we have an ashwagandha powder, a beetroot powder, coconut milk powder, wheatgrass, acai, a handful of others too. And then we also have our functional beverage blends, which is like your traditional greens blend, a reds blend, a blue energy blend. Has a little bit of caffeine in it. So just, and those are, like I said, blends of, you know, greens, like all of your vegetables, the reds blend up a bunch of different fruits. Those are our main products. And in total, like I said, we have over 20 SKUs, but the protein powders, they definitely have the most distribution in brick and mortar retail. They're definitely our best performers.
That's interesting. So what's your theory around why the protein powders are the kind of hero products? Is it because that space is so much bigger? Like there's a lot more demand for protein in general. So there's just a bigger pie to divide up. Or is there something drawing people to your plant based protein powders over others?
That's a good question. I think the protein space in general, I think, is probably the best moving category for most supplement companies. I think because it just has the most general awareness. I think most people that are active or are working out know that they need probably a little bit more protein than, you know, a sedentary person. So I think just the average consumer is more aware of the protein category in and of itself, as opposed to like beetroot powder. Like, what the heck does that do for me? I don't think most people would really know that. So yeah, I think the protein category is just the most aware in terms of consumers. And our protein specifically, I mean, you can see the labels. So if I held it up close, each label kind of has like its own little cartoon on it. So we're very fun. We're very family friendly. We have, I don't want to disparage anybody, but our main competitors' labels are very plain, very corporate, very bland. We kind of go at it as a little bit different of approach. We're more family friendly, fun. Each SKU has its own unique label with its own unique artwork on it. It's kind of like, reminds me of the days when I was a kid and I was looking at the back of a cereal box, looking at all the comics and the cartoons on there. So it's fun to look at. It's fun for the whole family. And I think it really does a great job of catching consumers' eyes on shelf. We actually have an award-winning graphic designer who does the labels. We call them our doodle art is what's on the label. Does a great job. Like I said, every SKU is unique too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you've mentioned families a couple times. Like the founders, when developing products, wanted to find something that would resonate with the whole family.
Mm-hmm. Something
they could
feel good about.
And then you also mentioned your design is family friendly. So I'm curious, do you know who your actual users? Like, you know, you can sometimes track who's buying, but do you know who's using in the household? Is it everyone in the family? Is it kids? Is it the parents, maybe grandparents, depending on how many people live in this household? But who's the primary user within there, or is it pretty evenly distributed?
We have pretty good data on who our buyers are on D2C. So we have, you know, almost, we have over 500,000 D2C buyers and, you know, their information and everything. So we do know that our main demographic is women ages about 20 to 40. That's our main demo. People definitely do share this with their whole family. Our national sales director, Mike, so our Reds product, he always tells a story about how he makes popsicles for his kids. He has two kids. He makes popsicles for his kids with the Reds. Yeah. So he mixes it up, you know, in a shaker as normal, pours it into an ice tray and puts little popsicle sticks in there. And he said his kids every day, they're begging him for, you know, the Reds popsicles. So he's got, he might have to like start his own little side hustle or something.
Yeah.
But,
no kidding.
Yeah. So people are definitely sharing it with their whole family. And like I said, USDA certified organic ingredients, stuff that people can feel good about giving their kids. My wife is 7 months pregnant. I make her a shake every day with our protein powder and some other ingredients as well. And, you know, I feel good about it. I feel like, you know, I'm helping our future son develop in the womb. And I feel, you know, it makes me feel good that I'm taking care of my family. So it's definitely something that people can share with their whole family.
Yeah, that's really cool. It might be a question I was going to ask later. I can't remember at the moment, but that made me think about this idea of more balanced or complete nutrition. I think it's something that you all focus on too. I do remember balance is part of it. So is that part of your formulation strategy with these protein mixes? Is it's not just a single protein boost, but it's got a lot of other stuff in there for nutritional balance.
Yeah, that's a great point. So the formulas are very well thought out. So we're in the process of like slowly tweaking our labels a little bit to do a better job of explaining the product on the label. So we're actually adding the term superfood. So it's plant-based superfood protein instead of just plant-based protein, because we kind of felt we were doing ourselves a little bit of a disservice in selling the product a little bit short on the label, just describing it as a protein, because like to your point, it is much more than a protein. We have some healthy fats in there, some healthy carbohydrate sources, an added digestive enzyme blend to help your product or help your body digest the product a little bit better, and then a vitamin and minerals blend too. So it is significantly more than just protein. There's flaxseed powder in there in the formula. There's quinoa for some healthy carbohydrates. Each serving has about 5 to 6 grams of fats from flaxseed and other, you know, healthier fat sources, in addition to pea protein for your protein source. And then, like I said, the digestive enzyme and the vitamin and minerals blend too. So it is much more than just protein powder.
Yeah, which, you know, some protein powders are literally just the protein powder, and some are like a whole rich blend of 30 ingredients. So I think that's a important note too. So yeah, that does make sense from a strategy standpoint to change it to from just plant protein, because it's almost, like you're saying, underselling. It's almost misleading in a, not a bad way, but you could sell it more.
We actually did something kind of interesting on Amazon. So with the new labels, this one behind me is still an old label, but with the new labels, the vanilla have rolled out into a lot of retailers already, and the chocolate was rolling out soon as well. On Amazon, we did some A and B testing between the old labels and the new labels, where, you know, on certain images it would show the old label, and then on other buyers or other customers on Amazon would get the new label. So we did A and B testing internally on our Amazon page, and the new label significantly outperformed the old label. There was like a 20% lift in the difference between the two. So we saw that on Amazon, and we're like, okay, we're going to make this a physical change, and you know, that'll be rolling out over the rest of the year across the other flavors of our protein. Like I said, right now the vanilla's rolled out, then it'll be chocolate, and then chocolate peanut butter, and on down the line. So,
well, that's a cool hint for other people in the industry in terms of Amazon's strategy in general too, is making sure you're doing those kind of A/B tests. And I think you also mentioned like SEO and stuff earlier. I hear a lot of brands wondering how to grow on Amazon, and there's various tactics that if you're not familiar with how Amazon works, you're just going to miss those tactics. So the fact that you're able to do some A/B testing is smart.
There's very subtle changes to the label too. So we have the USDA certified organic logo on there. We made that a little bit bolder and slightly changed the color of it to make it pop a little bit more. So it's something that, you know, consumers that care enough to look for a USDA certified organic logo, like they want to see it. So we made that pop a little more, and then we added the term superfood and a couple other very subtle changes. So it wasn't a huge, like a black and white difference. It was just a couple subtle changes here and there ended up making a big difference.
Yeah, I forget the exact quote, but I think it was Ray or Charles Eames that said something to the effect of something like, design isn't the details are the design, or it was something to that effect. And it's exactly what you're saying. Like, the package can look beautiful, but is it communicating all the right things in the right hierarchy and dialing in exactly how you're communicating it, like literally down to the word use or the color that you're putting that word in or the icon in or something like that? Are those little tiny nerdy details that if you tweak that, it can make all the difference, you know? Yeah, some people think, oh, our label's not performing, so we have to completely change it, but it might not be that. That's cool. So you also mentioned superfood single ingredients. How are your customers typically using those?
Yeah, they're really cool. And somebody that kind of nerds out about ingredients like myself, so I love throwing them into my shakes and just kind of customizing it how I want, right? And you can customize it, you know, depending on the ingredient, you can customize it based on the flavor or on what you're trying to get out of it too. For example, we have like ashwagandha powder. Anybody that knows about ashwagandha knows it can, you know, it's an adaptogen. It can help with stress, help with your physical performance. And then we have a coconut milk powder too. But I mean, coconut, yeah, there's some healthy fats in coconut milk, but it's not really something you're going to feel. But you'll notice it in your smoothie because it'll give a, you know, obviously a coconutty flavor to it, and then also make it a little bit creamier as well. So you can customize your shakes for, like I said, taste, feel, or functional benefit as well. So they're really cool just based on what you're trying to do with your shake.
Yeah, I think I saw some other things, like maybe if I remember correctly, like some spirulina and some other kind of like algae type ingredients too that you can customize either for color or...
We have a luminous blue spirulina. I mean, if you put it in a vanilla shake, it'll turn the whole shake like that beautiful ocean blue. It's actually gone viral on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok. I'm a little too old for TikTok, I think. But there's a famous TikTok influencer. This was probably, I don't know, 2 years ago now. was making like a, I think she called it like a blue ocean smoothie or something. And she put a scoop of our luminous blue spirulina powder in the smoothie and completely inadvertently like left the package out on the counter in the background. And her video got like 10 million views overnight. And then people saw the package and just assumed that that's like the only place in the world to buy luminous blue spirulina. There aren't many brands out there that do have a luminous blue spirulina like that. And there is a difference between regular spirulina and the luminous blue. So there aren't many other brands out there that do have that product. But just the fact that ours was like laying on the counter in the background of her video that got 10 million views overnight. We like sold out of it on D2C like the next day and they were flying off the shelves. That product was in Whole Foods at the time too. It still is. But they were flying off the shelves at Whole Foods. So like Whole Foods is calling us to try and figure out what's going on. We're internally trying to figure out like what the heck is going on. Like, why did all of our luminous blue spirulina inventory just disappear overnight? And finally, somebody found the TikTok video and they were like, holy crap. Like, this is the power of social influence and social media. And ever since then, we've been trying to capture that lightning in a bottle again. It's not quite worked the same. I think it was literally just, you know, the craziest circumstances that caused that. But yeah, still a very unique story nonetheless.
Yeah. Again, that's like one of those things where you see someone out there crushing it and you don't know why. And sometimes they don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. it took us like a whole day or two. We were lagging behind trying to figure out like what the heck is going on. I mean, we'll take it, right? Sales is sales. But like we wanted to figure out why this was happening and we eventually did figure it out. But
yeah. And I know so many brands that are trying to plan for those kind of scenarios, yeah. Like send out, you know, influencer kits or even pay to, you know, get some product placement, but it never works the same when it's something you're buying. Typically you can get some results, but like it's those random, my product showed up in a TV show or my product ended up in
Jake
Kim
Paul
Kardashian's
took a sip
bag
of my beverage on his podcast or like, yeah, or Joe Rogan mentioned my book on his podcast. And then,
yeah. In fact, I get so many social media ads of people literally just saying, why is Joe Rogan talking about his product on his podcast? Yeah. And it's like they take that moment and then they try to multiply it by spreading it through their own content. That's awesome. So I know you, beyond having products that are good for you and have, you know, organic certification and stuff, you also go above and beyond and have some like an impressive give back program with your 10 million meals project. Can you talk a little bit about that and tell us how it's going?
Yes, we have our Project 10 Million Meals. That's our partnership with Feeding America, where for every product sold, we donate a meal to Feeding America. And what's cool about that for us is we're actually able to like geolocate that donation. So if our product sells off the shelf at Tops Market in upstate New York, we will match our one meal donation to that geographical region where the product was sold. So that's something that's really cool. I mean, it makes selling our product that much more rewarding. Not only we're trying to improve the health of the consumers, we're also giving back to, you know, food insecure families within the region where the product sells. And to date, we're just over 4 million meals. So we're a little bit over 4 million meals donated. And once we hit 10 million, we're not just going to stop. We'll call it Project 20 million meals after that or something. So yeah, so it's a pretty cool mission and definitely something that is very rewarding to be a part of.
Yeah, that's the geolocation is really cool too. When you were telling me about that, it's the first time I'd ever heard of someone doing that tied to their, you know, buy one, give one kind of model. So if you sell on Amazon, for example, are you still able to track that data and donate and wherever that person's buying? Or is that more like you're able to track it if it's sold out of a Whole Foods in Brooklyn, you know where it was bought?
You know, I'm not sure about on Amazon. I have to ask the Amazon sales team for that. But yeah, in the brick and mortar retailers, we're able to track that based off of, I mean, the point of sale at places where we have it, but then also if it's like a smaller independent grocery store, we can track it through the distributor. So we know where our products are going. We know where the batch numbers are going when they go out through the distributors and stuff like that. So yeah, the brick and mortar side, we're able to track easily. The Amazon side, I'm not quite sure, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously just a good program to have that I think I get the impression you're just doing it because it feels like a good thing to do. But out of curiosity, do you hear your customers or consumers really talking about that as like one of the reasons they bought in the first place or continue to buy from you?
Yeah, it's 50-50. The people that do resonate with it and feel passionate about it, they definitely mention it, but then a lot don't as well. I would say probably half the people that purchase our products probably don't even know that. But it is featured on our website and then on some of the products as well, the where we have bigger label space, like on the protein powders especially, we'll have little blurbs about it on there. So we do try to make consumers aware that, you know, when they do purchase our product, they also are helping us help others. So it is a pretty cool, like I said, it's just a pretty cool mission to be involved with overall.
Yeah, I have this theory that I haven't done like scientific tests on or whatever to confirm, but the just based on what I know about consumer behavior and priorities as well as branding, et cetera, is that the package design, your branding, whatever, is going to get people to try your product in the first place, right? Because it's not like they can immediately taste it. They got to see it. They got to be attracted to it. They got to find it. It's got to be compelling. They take the product home. They try the product. If the product's great, that'll get them to come back and buy the product again. But the thing in my theory that keeps them coming back to your specific brand instead of just finding another brand that also tastes great is the mission part. Whether it's organic, whether it's the buy one, feed one, or just being a well-run business or minority owned, whatever it is, but you've got some sort of mission baked in there. I feel like that's the part that really builds loyalty to some degree, is people feel like they really want to be part of that. They want to support it. They have affinity for it. So that's kind of a working theory. So maybe as you talk to other sales team or marketing folks, maybe see if that resonates with them and you can get back to me on whether or not that's true, like based on surveys and stuff.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's probably more than a theory. I think most consumers, they just want to feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves whenever they spend their hard-earned money on a product. If you go out and buy a big CPG conglomerate's product, you probably don't really feel like you're a part of the team. If you do go out and buy, you know, a smaller startup company's product and they also have the same alignment as you do when it comes to their health and wellness and their missions to give back and the fact that they're fun, family friendly, I think, you know, it's easier to feel a part of that team than it is to feel a part of like some big corporate suits team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. So I know plastic's also a big issue kind of circling around consumers' minds, wanting to avoid plastic or just try to buy more sustainable packaging, but also with brands, you know, a lot of brands are trying to solve that problem too. And if I understand correctly, I think every one of your packages has some sort of level of plastic, but you also mentioned to me that you have kind of an initiative around using at least some post-consumer recycled plastic. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's no secret. I think, you know, it's an inevitability at this point, and it's no secret that most brick and mortar retailers do prefer a plastic bottle like the one behind me, just because it's for years now, for decades, that's how they plan their shelf space. That's how they do their planograms, is we know that this plastic bottle is this, you know, this many inches wide, this many inches deep, takes up exactly this much space on the shelf. So then when you do try to introduce a gusset bag or you know, something made of recyclable material or post-consumer recyclable material, it kind of throws a wrench in their system that's been established for the past 20 plus years. But that being said, so one thing we do is on our website, so any D2C orders on our website, if you go on our website and buy our protein powder, instead of it coming in a tub like that currently, it'll come in a 25% post-consumer recycled gusset bag. So it's an eco-friendly, it's an actual gusset bag. It's got like a nice textured feel to it as well. But that's one thing we're doing to try to, you know, do what we can to reduce our plastic uses. That, like I said, our D2C purchases do come in bags. And then the superfood single ingredients that are now really starting to gain some traction in brick and mortar retail, they are in gusset bags as well. That just, for that particular category of product, that just kind of is naturally what it's been in already anyway. Like if you look at companies with similar products on the shelf, like a Bob's Red Mill comes to mind. They've been on shelves in brick and mortar grocery stores for years, but they've always been in bags. So they kind of set the standard for that category of product to be in bags already. Whereas protein powder, if you go back and look at protein powder that was at GNC in the 1980s, it's always been in jars or tubs. So it just kind of, it seems like however it initially got started in retail is how it still is to this day to an extent. So yeah, but we are definitely making a conscious effort to reduce our plastic. And the easiest way we can do that, the most impactful way we can do that quickly is D2C, the products that we sell off of our own website.
Makes sense, yeah. It's funny too that you're talking about those category standards that are hard to break because retailers and consumers and whatever just expect products to be in that type of package, whether it's functionally or just visually or they stack better or something like that, right? But then some brands come along, like one that just popped in my head is Califia Farms, where they come in and say, you know what, we're not going to do a milk carton. We're going to do this kind of rounded shaped plastic bottle. And in their particular case, it worked for them because they were able to just completely stand out from everything else and draw attention to them with that kind of unique, maybe even patented bottle form. And whereas other categories, if you try to come in and like change the shape or form or size or whatever, it's just not going to go anywhere. So it's like knowing your category maybe it's even like having conversations with buyers or something like that before you commit to a package form if you're trying to shake things up, because that shaking things up could help or it could really hurt. But it's good that you're doing some experiments to try to find some, you know, ways to support the circular economy with recycled materials. So to kind of wrap up some of the cost product kind of portion of this chat, where can people go find costs? Like, where should they go look? What retailers are you in? What online platforms are best?
Well, I'll definitely plug the brick and mortar retailers first to not help out the D2C and Amazon team. So, no, obviously you can go to our website, cost.com, and buy us D2C. You can find us on Amazon. In brick and mortar retail, we're in Whole Foods chain-wide nationwide, Vitamin Shoppe chain-wide nationwide, Dick's Sporting Goods. Here in the Northeast, where I'm the manager, so we're in Wegmans, Giant Eagle, Tops, Big Y, Weiss. Out on the West Coast in California, we're in Mother's Market, we're in Jimbo's Naturally, and we're in Publix down south, like in, you know, the southeastern United States. We have some great distribution for sure.
So whatever, I know you're kind of more of the Northeast region, but whatever region they're in, there's probably a chain in their region.
Definitely,
or do you have like a gap in the market somewhere? Okay, cool. That's awesome. I'm going to pause the conversation for a quick message from one of our favorite impact-driven community members, Detox.
Greener, eco-sensible living is possible when we make small changes that can have a big impact. When you shop Detox, you're purchasing eye-catching, appealing, and sturdy tableware that's made from naturally fallen palm leaves. Our microwave-safe, single-use, disposable tableware is completely natural and compostable. Not only is it more attractive than other disposable items, it empowers and employs a workforce of women in India. Shop DTOCS.com today.
I highly recommend the Detox tableware, not only because it's sturdy and sustainably made, but because the company was founded by a past guest on the show, Pallavi Pandey. Tune in to episode 63 to hear her story of being a mompreneur on a mission. And now back to the conversation. So I want to shift a little bit into some advice for other folks in the industry. So what are some of the big wins you've had recently and or like big goals you're really working on right now?
Well, the coolest win to me personally, it was getting us into Dick's Sporting Goods for a number of reasons. So one, I live in Pittsburgh. Dick's Sporting Goods is headquartered in Pittsburgh. And I grew up my whole life playing sports. I mean, you can see I got my football helmets up on the shelf behind me. So my brother played sports his whole life too. So when we were little, I think my favorite time as a family was to all pile in the car together and go to Dick's Sporting Goods and buy our equipment for the year at the start of every season. So then when I got the chance to go present cost to Dick's Sporting Goods at their headquarters, I mean, just like a complete full circle moment. And I told that story in my sales presentation to them, and they loved it. They brought us in. They brought two of our products in stores, and they brought two more of our products online as well. That was a really cool personal win for me. Being that Dick's is headquartered here in Pittsburgh, grew up shopping there my whole life. It was always my favorite place to go shop as a kid. And then to get Cost products on their shelf was actually also Cost's first time in a sporting goods retailer too. So just several unique reasons that made that a really cool win.
And now you get to use your actual working hours and maybe even write it off as a business expense to go shop at Dick's.
Yeah, there's one like literally 10 minutes from here. So another cool win is in Wegmans. Wegmans is a pretty well-known retailer here in the Northeast. There's about 109 Wegmans locations. So December of 2022, we had zero SKUs in Wegmans. Now, July of 2023, we have 9 SKUs in Wegmans. They've really, really taken a liking to us. Their category manager is excellent. Our broker that works with me on the Wegmans account has been great. We've kind of really taken a lot of shelf space up at Wegmans here in the past, I don't know, 6+ months. So that's been a really cool win. They liked us so much that they actually just decided to put two of our superfood single ingredients in their smoothie recipe. So in their in-store smoothie bars, they're using two of our products exclusively in their smoothie recipes. Our coconut milk powder and our luminous blue spirulina will be featured in Wegmans smoothies in their in-store smoothie bar. So, I mean, one, that's great marketing. Customers can come in, see our products, you know, behind the counter at the smoothie bar, you know, get a beautiful blue looking smoothie made with our luminous blue spirulina powder, and then they can go buy that product on the shelf at Wegmans. So that's just a really cool initiative that Wegmans has done. They've really taken a liking to us, and it's been a really, really fun account to work on.
That's amazing. Congrats on both of those. Definitely fun moments, both from sales, but also like personal connection.
Yeah. And just the cool stuff that you can do in the CPG industry too, right? Where, you know, getting us into a sporting goods retailer, grew up playing sports my whole life, or even the different ways to promote your product at a retailer. Like I never in a million years would have thought, like as I was selling us into Wegmans, I never in a million years would have thought, oh, we should try to get in their smoothie bar too. But somebody mentioned it in a meeting and I was like, that's a great idea. Let's see if we can make that happen. And it does, it did. So it's kind of like a choose your own adventure sometimes.
Yeah, I think some brands are more instinctively drawn to the food service side of things, but some stumble in it. But it is a whole other channel to pay attention to, you know, back to the complexity of CPG. Like it's a whole other beast. It's nice when it connects on one customer and you get both their food service and on the shelf. That's really cool. So what are some of the biggest hurdles you've had to overcome these past few years?
I mean, supply chain, right? You know, not too long ago, all of supply chain was in a mess. I mean, we were having problems finding our plastic bottles for our jars. Every once in a while, a random ingredient will be impossible to source because there was some wildfire in some South American rainforest and it caused the ants to eat all the crops. Like there's just always some crazy yeah. reason why X ingredient is not available right now. So you have to either, you know, pivot your formula, or hopefully you have some redundancies built into your supply chain, or hopefully you're just maybe by luck just sitting on a lot of that ingredient right now because you stocked up when it was cheap and available. So yeah, just dealing with the back end of the supply chain. And then also whenever that supply chain does slow down, being able to explain that to your retailer, your category managers and your buyers at mom and pop's supermarket, why you can't get them a protein shipment on time. So, you know, kind of navigating that whole winding road is definitely always a challenge.
Yeah, I've heard of every different slice of the supply chain issues, even like one that you didn't mention is like shipping costs, right? Like maybe you had a supply chain that was sustainable based on your current margins with maybe having to ship ingredients or, you know, manufacture your product in one country and ship it to another or something like that. But then, of course, the pandemic hits and, you know, cost of oil, et cetera, goes through the roof, cost of shipping goes through the roof. And then all of a sudden your model is no longer financially sustainable and you're losing money on every product you sell and have to try to pivot to move manufacturing or change suppliers or do something else to save the business. So it's crazy how many different issues can be caused by, you know, whether it's the pandemic or inflation or like you were saying, a drought or something like that can affect so many things. Like everyone's beloved sriracha is hard to find on shelves right now, you know, because of the same thing. It's the pepper, I can't remember if it's a jalapeno pepper or whatever, but the people growing peppers are having a really hard time with, I think it was either drought or some sort of disease that's causing supply issues. So it can hit you everywhere. And that's something you got to keep your eyes open for. And I think have redundancies around or something like that. Yeah, makes sense. I guess let's flip that straight into, you know, best piece of advice, speaking of redundancies or whatever, but like, what's your best piece of advice for other brands trying to grow?
I would say just try to learn from others, both, you know, successes and mistakes. They always say success leaves clues. So does failure, right? If you can hear a story from a brand or talk to a founder or just somebody else in your shoes, in a similar role at a different company, just try to learn as much as possible from others. That way you don't have to make the same mistakes, and or that way you have an easier time finding your success. And then whenever you have the opportunity, so our chief revenue officer, he's been in the CPG game for, I don't know, 30 plus years, worked for a number of different CPG companies, not only in the health and wellness space, but broader CPG as well. I mean, he's just an insane resource of knowledge. I feel like sometimes whenever I'm in a meeting with him, like I should be paying him like a consulting fee just for him sharing all of his experience and his knowledge with me. So whenever you have an opportunity to be around somebody like that, just be a sponge, like soak up as much information as you possibly can. And then that way, hopefully you won't have to like, you know, pay for it. Because like I said, I literally feel like I should be charged a consulting fee anytime that he's, you know, dropping knowledge like that in meetings. So
yeah, it makes sense. Because I mean, it is so hard to absorb decades of knowledge that aren't just the time, but also the complexity or the scale or whatever else, right? And it's how do you package that all up into a succinct format? We were just talking about the same thing on my team recently of each of us comes with our own expertise or background or whatever. And how do we set up systems and processes to more regularly share that expertise with each other and maybe document it in a way that for future team members is repeatable to share that, right? So I was talking to someone that had a really good robust kind of knowledge sharing platform internally with their company. I think it was Chris from Cartograph, if I remember correctly, but he has this awesome kind of, I think it was Notion channel, where they just dump everything in. You do something novel, whatever, you document it, you put it in Notion and tag it, whatever. And then anytime anyone else is looking to do that, they can either go search the database or you can tell them where that article is or something. And it's just like a nice way to say, yeah, I had to go figure that out. Even if it's something as simple as, how do you do A/B testing on Amazon? Like, you get a new person on the team that's never done that before. Great, go read this article.
Yeah, and then you're passing along, you're helping others along the way. That is what's cool about CPG too. And then especially in the health and wellness, the better for you space, it seems like most people in the space are, even competitors, they're kind of friendly with each other and they help each other out along the way. And I've said it before, especially in the world of health and wellness, where we're trying to provide healthy options for the average consumer, because Lord knows, you know, this country on average needs to improve their health. I think there's room for everybody to win. There really is. I mean, there's so many shelves out there, so many different sales channels out there. There's room for everybody to win, especially in health and wellness.
Yeah. And I think when you are more mission driven, like trying to improve the supply chain or have more sustainable practices, make people healthier, whatever it is, it does make it feel more collaborative than competitive, right? Because no one brand can fix everything across the world or in every state or in every household. So supporting each other on a similar journey, on a common agenda, makes so much sense. Whereas if you don't have a mission and it's literally just about market share and profit, then you're probably going to be a little more cutthroat and just be like, well, I'm not sharing my secrets with you because I want to increase my slice of the market by 0.01% this year. And in order to do that, I got to cut you out of this retailer. But especially when you're a smaller brand and in a more mission-driven brand, there's so much room to grow that why not share in the wealth and have an abundance mindset? Speaking of which, how has being an impact-driven brand helped and how has it made it harder?
Well, I mean, from a personal perspective, it definitely helps. Like I said, the Project 10 Million Meals, just you feel good about it at the end of the day, right? When I sell our product into Fresh Time, you know, we just got 5 SKUs approved at Fresh Time for upcoming September reset. So it feels good. One, that, you know, I'm doing it for my company, but also now I'm doing good for everybody that shops at Fresh Time. They're getting healthier options. And two, or three even, I'm doing good for any food insecure family around Fresh Time, because now anytime somebody buys our product at a Fresh Time, they're going to get a meal donated through Feeding America to that area. So it really just, at the end of the day, makes you feel good to know that you're giving back through your daily work anyway, that you would be doing otherwise anyway. How does it make it more challenging? I think part of the way that it does make it more challenging, I mean, it is an expense, right? So on our P&L, it is an expense on our P&L. So from a financial standpoint, it's something we have to consider whenever I do all of my financial modeling when I open up a new account. So not only am I now budgeting for the freight and the payment terms and the promotions that I have planned, I'm also putting in that percent budget for our Feeding America initiative. But at the end of the day, it's definitely worth it because one, it's helping others, and two, it also feels good.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I keep thinking policy could help with, is when you're competing on shelf, competing on price on shelf, and you're the mission-driven business that's donating meals and paying for certifications and paying more for your ingredients and putting healthier stuff in your products instead of a bunch of fillers, that comes at a cost, and it's hard to compete on price with somebody that's cutting all those corners. Yet our government systems and subsidies are currently set up to support those people that are cutting corners more often and subsidizing their foods that aren't nutritious, or subsidizing their business models that are outsourcing jobs, or, you know, not paying fairly, or, you know, whatever else it is. And I just keep thinking, like, what if we could flip that as a country, or maybe globally even better? What if the businesses doing things right got subsidies to keep those costs lower for consumers, and the businesses that are polluting, the businesses that are, you know, poisoning people or giving you crappy junk food or not paying fair prices or whatever, what if they had to pay extra fees in order to cut those corners? You have to, and therefore their price became the higher price product. So sure, if you want your Cheetos, let's just say, you can get them, but they're going to be $30 a bag. I'm just making that number up. Whereas if you want your healthier version of some sort of crunchy snack like Iwan Organics or something like that, then those are just $7 a bag, which is the true cost, maybe a little bit lower because of some subsidies. But like, that would change so much stuff in the world, back to like, let food be thy medicine. If everyone could afford healthier food and it was accessible, easy to come by, and convenient, then we would solve so many other problems in the world and our country. We would save so much money on healthcare and all these other kind of issues going on. It would literally change the world. And if it's just because we've put the money in the wrong places.
I hear you. I also heard you shout out I Want Organics. Mark is awesome. I Want It. They're a great product. But also, you could take it a step further too and subsidize the retailers that are choosing to bring in healthier, better for you options, or, you know, sustainably sourced products. So you could, you know, give them a break as well to kind of incentivize them to skew towards those healthier, better for you options. Be another way to
think about it. Yeah. So maybe that's, you know, something we can all collectively work on as an impact-driven CPG industry is try to get better policies. And there are people out there, you know, new farm bills coming out and stuff. So making progress. But I feel like if we all join forces, we'll be able to overpower some of those big companies. With that said, just out of curiosity, I know you mentioned both your kind of history playing football as well as your time in the Army. What skills do you feel like carried over from those, I was going to say jobs or professions or time in working in those spaces, what skills kind of carried over into your current role in CPG and sales?
Yeah, I think from the Army, one of the biggest things that carried over, you really learn what difficult actually is in the Army. And not to take away from anybody's problems, like I said, we're all running our own race. But now whenever I have a stressful day at work or supply chain problem or, you know, Stop and Shop is asking me why that shipment's late, it's not a real problem. I can come at it with a much more level-headed approach. It's not that difficult to figure out. There are people out there with plenty more difficult problems than I have. And that's one thing I learned from the Army. That, and I was an infantry officer, so I was in charge of a platoon of 42 soldiers. And just being able to lead and manage personnel was also something that was very helpful. So not only manage personnel, but manage different personalities, different types of people, right? In my platoon, I had everybody from, you know, an underprivileged kid from the inner city to country boy out on the farm and everything in between. So you get to deal with a lot of different personality types and you have to learn how to manage each one individually. And that's something that's been very helpful.
Nice. Very cool. Anything from football?
Football, I think the biggest thing that carries over to football is just, that's where I really learned to love to work out, train, eat healthy, and live that, you know, very disciplined lifestyle. And that's something I still do today. I'm very active. You know, I work out every day. I run a lot. I eat healthy. That's something that started back in football. And it's, you know, I think it keeps me sharper in business. If I'm able to take care of myself physically, I feel better mentally. That's something that I've learned from football. And I hopefully be able to take that through the rest of my life.
Yeah. And like those benefits that come from being healthy and being able to bring more of your full self to whatever it is that you're doing professionally or passionately in your community or something. That's exactly what I'm talking about back with the making healthier food accessible, as if everyone had the ability to feel that good and to eat well and feel good, feel sharp, feel prepared, have the mental, emotional bandwidth to be able to deal with whatever they're dealing with in a calm fashion instead of just breaking down because you're carrying too much on your back. We would all be better at our jobs and maybe have to work less and make more money and be able to bring more impact to the world. So anyway.
Stress less and just be healthier overall.
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, to wrap up, what does the future of food look like for you?
The future of food. I really hope that the bigger CPG companies out there, I'm talking like the, you know, the massive conglomerates, right? The Coca-Colas, the Pepsi-Colas, the P&Gs, all the big players in CPG. I really hope that they kind of follow the example of some of the younger startup up-and-coming companies in that they do shift to better for you options, healthier options, sustainably sourced options. And I think it is, you're starting to see it. I really hope it just sticks long term. I know like Gatorade, for example, is coming out with more zero sugar options. Even, you know, Coke and Pepsi are really starting to leverage that zero sugar label dressing. And I think if the big CPG brands start doing that, then it's going to become kind of like we talked about earlier, like the standard. It'll be the standard across the entire space. And I really hope that that's what it goes towards the future. It's hopefully a healthier future in food is what I would like to see.
Yeah. And I do, like to your point, see them jumping in and either launching their own stuff or buying smaller brands that are doing good stuff. And that's great. They're seeing at least the economic value of that kind of business or better products. My concern is just like we did an episode on with Seth Goldman on Honest Tea about how Coca-Cola discontinued Honest Tea and then he quickly jumped in and replaced it with Just Iced Tea. And part of that conversation was my frustration with, okay, these big conglomerates are going to buy these brands that are doing well financially, because right now a lot of the Better for the World brands are doing better financially or having more growth, right? And that's great. But as soon as it's not easy or high enough profit margin or whatever to continue that line, I think these big conglomerates are proving that they're just willing to drop it instead of working to figure out how to continue to make it work. And so my fear is, if all the big companies buy all the little companies, and then as soon as it doesn't make sense anymore, as soon as they find a way to cut corners again and make a product crap and it stops selling well and they drop it, then we're back to the status quo again. So I think I would agree with what you're saying. I hope those companies kind of follow the lead of younger up-and-coming brands or more purpose-driven brands. But I hope it changes them at the core, and it's not just an investment opportunity that they're willing to drop as soon as it gets difficult. Because the difference between a Coca-Cola running a business like that and a smaller brand founder running something like that is, when you hit walls or come around difficult times or bumpy road or whatever as a more passionate founder working on a cause, you're not going to give up easily. You're going to find a way around those hurdles. That passion is going to keep you driving, right? You're not just doing it. You're doing it partly because it's your baby, but you're also doing it because it's making an impact. Like you were saying, like you love that you're feeding people in need, et cetera. And that drives you a little bit more. So I'm hoping that the big corporations, conglomerates will take in some of that ethos and be willing to push harder when things get tough, instead of just dropping stuff because it's dropped a percentage in margin or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe it's up to our younger generation too, as we do, you know, hopefully move up ladders in the CPG world. We keep those same fundamental values and beliefs that we had when we were, you know, working for mission-driven companies or better for you companies. So could be honest.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Like getting some of those more impact-driven folks as the executives of those big companies and or sitting on the board or whatever. Like, I think that could make some big impact. So cool. I know I've kept you a little bit long, and I appreciate the time sharing your story and some cool insights and telling us a little bit more about what COS is up to. So appreciate everything you're doing. Thanks for sharing your journey. Thanks for going on this journey and trying to do things that make the world a better place. And we'll point everyone to your website and maybe your LinkedIn as well in the show notes so they can come and contact you and learn more.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me, Gage. It's been awesome. I'm always happy to share, you know, COS's story and my story as well.
If you like this show, remember to help us grow by liking, reviewing, and sharing. If you're new here, don't forget we have over 100 episodes in the archive. Some might be called Evolve CPG, but it's the same show, so dig in for more goodness. If you consider yourself an impact-driven professional, join me over at impactdriven.community, where we're supporting each other's growth as impact leaders.